Let's go, everyone. All right, one second. I just realized I did not start the spaces, so a little unprofessional right now, but I'm just super hyped to have this conversation. So we're going live to everyone in the spaces. 1 second to you guys on YouTube. Give me 1 second. All right, we're live. Okay, guys, this one I think is going to be an absolute rip. When I scheduled this with CJ, we literally had no idea any of this stuff was on the horizon, and we couldn't have picked a better day for us to have this conversation. When CJ came on the live show, he absolutely took over the show, absolutely killed it. And a lot of the things he said were very prescient to the current moment we are seeing. And then I knew we were going to do this conversation, so I picked a few little threads from his Twitter account, because he just keeps nailing the nail on the head on what's going on right now, in my opinion. So without further ado, I'm bringing in CJ, and we're just going to let this one rip, because if you guys saw the live show, CJ just went bananas on us and absolutely blew us away. So without further ado, CJ, how you doing today? How you been, man, since we talked a week ago?
Whew, man, went by fast, didn't it? I'm doing good, though, and fast. I appreciate you having me back. Thank you.
No, man, as we like to do over here, honestly, I usually do more of like a social cultural bent to my podcast. But again, this one, I think, is just going to be just too much signal. So this is where we're going to go. Today, we might actually talk a little bit of Bitcoin, guys. So buckle up. And I think we're going to get our minds blown today. All right. So first and foremost, one thing you said on the show, what was that, 2 weeks ago, which I thought was very, very prudent, was the idea of inflation is the signal we've been waiting for. Inflation is the sign that things are blowing up and that Bitcoiners are right. So you want to start there, and then we'll just lead the conversation wherever we go.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, on that episode, a lot of stuff that I talked about actually is starting to unfold right now. So it's happening even faster than some of us can really realize, mostly because it's happening under the hood, right? And then the powers that be, the authorities, you know, their data is not as accurate as it should be. But when you talk about inflation, where you really have to go to is the definition of inflation, because what we're seeing is like two different viewpoints bashing heads, and we don't even have the right words to explain our viewpoints, because the Keynesians, you know, the modern monetary theorists are saying inflation is one thing. And then free market advocates are saying inflation is another thing. So obviously, you know, Yellen came out from Powell's answers the other day. We can tell that they don't think that running a budget deficit causes inflation. They don't think that increasing the currency supply causes inflation. So they've just changed the definition of inflation to a general rise in prices. But that is not the correct definition of inflation. The correct definition of inflation is a general rise in prices because of an increase in the currency supply units that steal their purchasing power from all other currency units. So they're just lopping off the because of what's happening and using a very generalized definition. And the best way to imagine this is to just quickly kind of go through the economics of how this would work. So today we see that the economy is struggling in real terms, right? So GDP without the right CPI GDP deflator is still positive. But when you go back and you look at real CPI and plug that in and have the proper deflator, GDP is stagnant or going down. What do I mean by that? It means the economy is not growing super fast. The economy is not the reason why prices were going up. The cure to higher prices is higher prices. So if the economy was the reason that prices were going up, like the government says it is, well, then that would be a good thing, because as prices go up, producers make more money. And as producers make more money, they increase their supply. And when they increase their supply, they lower their marginal cost of production. The example I used last time is, if you can build 1 million water bottles, it's going to be cheaper per water bottle than if you produce 100,000 water bottles. So this process, which is a natural free market process, it's the price discovery mechanism that signals to entrepreneurs who build businesses and create jobs where there's opportunity to make a profit. That's what draws their attention. So profit is a good thing. And those higher prices drive profit, which drives supply, which lowers the marginal cost of production, which eventually allows producers to lower the front end price, because they're more concerned about moving more units than they are about at a higher price. So if we were seeing that kind of inflation, then what we would really see is GDP like we've never seen before. GDP would be off the charts because the economy would be so hot. That'd be the reason that all the prices are getting pushed up. But instead, the real reason that the prices are going up is not because of demand from the economy, but from a lack of purchasing power from the dollar. The dollar gets continually diluted, and day after day, it can buy less and less and less. Now, temporarily, there's been an increase in purchasing power because the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates in the most aggressive clip in modern history. So because of this extreme rise in interest rates, there has been a temporary value of purchasing power driven into the dollar, especially against other fiat currencies. But when push comes to shove on a net-net basis, there's still a lag time to the 40% increase of dollars they printed as a result of COVID. So this disinflationary wave we've had, this little break that we've had, is solely due to the increase in interest rates, attracting people into the dollar and buying demand into the dollar. But if they really knew that the real rate of inflation was double what the government CPI says, well, maybe they wouldn't be rushing into the dollar as much. So there's all this data, there's all these facts, it's all getting spinned around, and it's simply not true. Another way I like to think of this, and I want to use a different example this show than I did last show, is that there's two sides to every transaction, right? You have the currency, and then you have the actual good or service. So in this case scenario, prices can go up and down based on the currency or based on the good and the service. So let's just take the good and service first, right? So the good and service affects the price through the basic free market price discovery mechanism, which is a supply-demand equilibrium. So if the supply goes up and the demand goes down, the price comes down. If the demand goes up, supply goes down, price goes up, and all everything in between there. But it's a free market signal based on the supply-demand equilibrium. So when there was a supply shock after COVID, yes, partially prices were going up because there was a lack of supply against consistent demand. But that's just one side of the currency pairing. Remember, the other side is the actual USD currency. So we have to understand what's being used to trade. If you think about it in really old terms, like they used to use the seashells, right? Well, as more and more people were getting seashells and people started to figure out, well, these things really aren't worth that much, the prices started going up. Well, the prices started going up because more and more people were buying stuff? No, prices started going up because more and more people were using the seashells and it was revealed that they weren't worth as much. So that's the same thing that's happening right now. More and more currency is being printed. And with the Fed's new program that just the banking term funding program they just launched, JP Morgan came out today and said it could inject up to $2 trillion into the system. Well, that's not quantitative tightening. That's not reducing the currency supply. That's significantly increasing the currency supply. Remember, they printed about $5 trillion for COVID. This is almost 50% of that. This should be an overall upwards of 10% plus increase in the currency supply. And people are sitting around thinking the prices are going to go down, which is a weird concept. Oh, let me get in the dollar. Let me get sit on the sidelines because prices are going to go down. But at the same time, the government is telling me the economy is on fire. So which one is it? It's this hypocrisy that is really starting to reveal that we're in what I call financial COVID, right? During COVID, the data was botched, the narratives were controlled. And in hindsight, we can look back and say, wow, that was some messed up stuff happened. Well, a year from now, we're going to be able to look back in hindsight and say, whoa, some messed up stuff happened, but it's financial COVID, not medical COVID. We are being, the data isn't right. It's getting mixed up. And we need to get our definitions right. So that's why it's so important for people to understand inflation is a general rise in prices, but not because of the economy, because of the dilution of the dollar.
Whew. All right. We're starting strong. Beautiful. Well, my first question is, I don't want to ask the question outright yet because I think I can lead you to there a little bit, but how has been your experience on trying to convey this message to people that it's not, you know, the Bitcoin price necessarily going up or, you know, the inflation, the prices of goods going up? It's that the dollar is getting weaker.
Yeah, it's sometimes it's a hard message to convey. But, you know, like in 2016, I would tell people about inflation. They'd be like, dude, I don't really care. I'm not, you know, inflation is less than 2%. If my dollar store item goes from a dollar to a dollar two, it's not really going to affect my life. But Now dollar store items are $1.25, and more expensive items are going up even more than that. So people are starting to pay attention now versus back then. And that's really another sign, because one of the tweets I sent out, somebody told me they liked the way I say this. The only difference between inflation and hyperinflation is trust. And a lot of people don't realize that. But if you go back and you study these systems and you study what happened, there's no one mathematical point in time where you can say, oh, once they breached this amount of printing, or once they did this, then that's when we went from inflation to hyperinflation. No, every single time, the catalyst is always the trust of the people. And that's what makes this current banking crisis so serious. It's not about that the banks are going to close and your money isn't going to be there. Your money's going to be there. Honestly, you shouldn't be worried about your money in the bank. You should be worried about how much you're going to be able to buy with the money in the bank. That's the real issue here. The real issue is they are diluting the dollar at such a fast pace that if you think prices went up quickly from 2020 until 2023, wait until you see what happens to prices from 2023 to 2026. It is going to get more violent, more volatile, and more aggressive than it's ever been, because they are not pumping the brakes, even though they say they are. They are pressing the gas. And when they're doing this, putting $2 trillion in right now, who knows what other banks are going to be exposed. I know you don't want me to dive right into it, but I have to say it. Banking balance sheets are worth shit, and it's fractional reserves. It's fractional reserves. So what? The government comes in and says, well, we're going to value your collateral at par. So all that principal value loss from buying treasuries at low yield and holding them all the way up as the yields rise, all that principal value loss, you don't have to worry about it. Well, that's fine. But reserves aren't backed one-to-one. Reserves, there is no reserve requirement after COVID. They never changed that back. There's just capital ratios according to Basel banking laws. So the banks can basically do whatever the hell they want and take whatever risk they want. And then the small fraction that they keep in reserves, it's fractional. And guess what? If a bank, even a big bank who properly hedged their risk, has to sell off because depositors want their money, not all of that reserve is kept in perfectly liquid cash equivalents. Banks would have to start selling off assets. And guess what? If they start selling off assets, that means they're going to be pulling liquidity from the market. So anybody that trades with size knows that whenever you're using big position, there's always a slippage factor. You have to figure out how much of the book that you can actually take. If these banks start taking big portions of the books, it's a doom loop. All the banks have to sell off their assets all at the same time to raise the reserve to actually give for the withdrawal demand, and prices would crater. So, and are they going to let that happen? No, they're just going to provide liquidity. But guess what? When you provide liquidity, that's the definition of inflation. So you can't get it both ways. And that's why they have to deny it. But the point where we are right now, their denial is almost laughable. You know, I saw Powell in the Congress with his testimony. He could barely answer the question. The girl's like, why 2%? Why 2%? I mean, I'm CJ Constantinos. I don't work at the Federal Reserve, but I know how the system works, and I can answer that question better than he can. Well, lady, we are the reserve currency of the world. So as the global economy grows, we have to grow the dollar supply, or else we're going to have deflation, and deflation is the evil monster of modern monetary theory. So was he ignoring the question? I mean, it was just gibberish. I don't even know if he understands the system. It seems like he's just being told. And I hate to say that, but it's true. I'm just giving my honest opinion by watching the words that were barely coming out of his mouth scramble. You know, it's obvious. Well, it's not obvious. It's worrisome to me. So what they're going to mess up, though, is not whether or not the dollars are going to be in the bank. What they're going to mess up is by providing too much liquidity, because they're in some kind of bubble that says that printing money isn't inflation, and that inflation is our fault. We're too successful. The economy's too hot. We need to punish you people. It's not us. It can't be us with our printer guns and that meme of Jerome Powell rolling off the hundreds. It can't be us increasing the currency supply. You're too successful. We got to punish you. We got to increase the price of money. We got to do all these things. And none of it is going to work, because they really, I don't know if it's malicious intent or if it's just incompetence, but it doesn't really matter which one it is, because the reality is the reality. And this is what happens. And the only thing that we can do to preserve our time and energy through time and space is Bitcoin. This is the only asset in the world that was specifically designed to protect our time and energy. There exists no other financial tool, derivative, product at all in the entire world that was specifically designed to protect time and energy the way Bitcoin was designed, with its difficulties, adjustments and it's having to protect your time and energy through time and space. By the way, not just through hyperinflation, but long after all these fiat shitcoins are long gone.
Absolutely love it. And CJ, do not hold back. Just go wherever you want. We'll guide the conversation to hit some of the points. But you hit on a few things, and I'm still working my way into the main question, but you hit on it anyways. What do you think would be more signal that the average person is losing trust in the legacy institutions? Because I think we did see the Bitcoin price react to, you know, to some sense that people are realizing like, oh my God, I need to get my money out of the system. But again, you know, what's the cliche saying? Causation is not correlation. So what would be the things that you're looking at right now that would further be more data points that people are waking up to this exact thing happening in the system and they losing trust?
Yeah. And I think specifically the answer is the inflation rate. So we're not seeing it now because it's always going to be hindsight. That's kind of what makes having somebody who understands the system and makes projections being so important, right? Obviously, some of these risk managers didn't make the right projections and bad things happened. Well, projections are important, but projections are made off of educated guesses. They're not made. Nobody knows the future. If you pretend to know the future, I mean, that's just a joke. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But what we do know is happening is that the Federal Reserve is in a position now where most likely they're going to pause. And then soon after that, they're going to cut rates. I mean, and even if they don't want to, the euro dollar market or the price of money for offshore banks, that's because remember, offshore banks can create dollars too. So it's not just US banks and the government deficit spending that creates new dollars. Foreign banks can create dollar denominated loans and create dollars, increase the supply of dollars. So that euro dollar market detaching from the domestic market, from our traditional yield curve, I mean, the market is calling the bluff of the Federal Reserve. And what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to provide liquidity, which causes inflation, and they're going to have to pause and then eventually lower rates. And if they don't want to lower rates, I went through that the last episode, so I won't go through this again, but it doesn't work. Right? Because the only two ways to commit to create dollars is the gov by deficit spending them or the banks by extending credit. Well, if the gov has to deficit spend at a higher rate, creates more currency units. If the banks are incentivized to lend with less risk and more reward, then they extend credit. That's why credit's at all-time highs right now. So all the incentives that are built into our economy are actually working to create more inflation, not less. And we are going to get a second wave. We've only had the first wave of inflation. People are like, "Woo, thank God we're done through that. I trust the federal government. We're good to go. Nothing to worry about." No, that's like Bitcoin taking its first rip up after the 2020 halving up to 40,000, came all the way back down. And then people are like, "That's it. It's over. It's only going to 40,000. We only went 100% above the last peak, guys. What a lame bull market." No, it's just the first wave, guys. Buckle up. Because get your Bitcoin, because it's the only way to hold through this. And Opti, pre-show, you were telling me about my Weimar Republic graph.
Yeah, I can pull it up for you. Because but yeah, go into that. That was the question that I was working my way to. Is the dollar going full Weimar, or are we Bitcoiners just reading into things?
No, it's going full Weimar. And here's why. Because trust is evaporating. And you can see on that chart right there, the price is the black line. And that red line is price volatility. So look, as the mark goes into hyperinflation, things become more volatile, not less. Okay, so this slow, steady growth, that's what store value is. Higher lows, that's what store value is. But demand bursts and premiums to natural asset value, that's where these big, big fluctuations and volatility come in. Now, look, I do believe we're in the trust us phase. Most people right now are still trusting that things are going to work out, but very soon no one knows the reason, but there will be a reason that trust is finally lost. Maybe because the Fed mishandles interest rates and they still try to hike, and that makes inflation even worse. I mean, lowering rates would actually help, because again, the government could borrow at lower rates and then the banks would start being more strict with their credit expansion. So they're just doing it backwards and they're pushing us forward in this chart, and inflation is the signal. So in the next 6 months to a year, when we see inflation go back to all-time highs and make new all-time highs, that is the signal that people are waking up. That is the ultimate confirmation that people are losing faith in the dollar and they're losing trust in the system as a store of value. That is the catalyst.
Honestly, if I wasn't a Bitcoiner, I would be absolutely terrified right now. Like what you're saying, it makes me feel a certain way, even though I know that I have the solution to the problem. It's still like, holy crap. Like we are really in the fork in the road where like we've been talking about this for years as a Bitcoiner. And now we really are at that point where we have to ask the fundamental question. And I know as Bitcoiners, we know the answer, but is the system fundamentally broken?
Yeah, the system is fundamentally mismanaged. That's the real problem. And I think, you know, I don't want to get flack from anybody, but if you just think about this, the dollar is actually naturally deflationary, right? Because it's only the abuse of the government who keeps expanding the currency units beyond the growth of the economy that is creating massive inflation. So because we are the reserve asset of the world, that's a privilege. And as the rest of the world grows and demand on dollars grow, well, then we can expand the currency supply and not experience inflation because we're doing it at a rate at which matches growth. But we are so far beyond responsible management of the money system. At this point, the expansion of the currency supply far outpaces the growth of the economy. That's why our debt to GDP levels are through the roof. We're at the point now where we'll probably never be able to pay it back. So that's one of the reasons I'm so aggressive about this second wave of inflation. And then even beyond that, a third wave of inflation. And by the way, it'll be perpetual. This can be happening forever. I know, Opti, you know that chart of from the Federal Reserve Education Department where it shows the purchasing power of the dollar. And it's just like a straight down chart.
Yeah, I can try to find it for you.
Yeah, so while you're looking for that, they have printed so many dollars that they have drained all the purchasing power from the dollar. So the dollar is at the end of its currency life cycle. There is no more value to extract from it. They have pushed it to the extremes by pushing the value out of the dollar. But guess what? They'll keep getting away with it until the people finally say, that's it. I'm not trusting the dollar to protect my value. They'll start getting their paychecks on the daily basis. You're not going to get paid every Friday or every other Friday. There it is right there. So you're not going to get paid every Friday or every other Friday. You're going to demand from your boss, I need to get paid today because I'm going to take that money and I'm going directly to the grocery store. And people are going to start to realize it's so bad now that I have to buy my stuff today because even if I just wait till tomorrow, I'm going to get much less stuff. And you can see that that's happening, but it's not happening to that extreme. Very slowly. And like I said earlier, the temporary rise in interest rates did deliver artificial strength to the dollar, which helped with this disinflationary wave, this little break that we've taken. But now that they can't keep pushing those rates up and they're going to have to bring them back down, well, that price pressure is going to disappear and the dollar is going to get weaker, even relative to other fiat shitcoins. And prices are going to go up again. And this time they're going to go up twice as fast. And with this banking crisis, they could go up five times as fast because so far it's $2 trillion. But this is still happening. This is still happening. This crisis is not over yet. The dust hasn't settled. This just happened. You have to remember in 2008, when Bear Stearns was bought out, it was like up to 6 months later that Lehman went bunk. So, you know, this could happen 6 months from now that there's a next catalyst. These things don't happen as fast as we want them to. That's something that being in Bitcoin now for going on my ninth year, man, Bitcoin teaches you patience. So for me, the next 6 months to a year is nothing. But for some people, 6 months to a year is like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm ready to be done my fiat mining job next month, not 6 months from now, not a year from now. So it's all relative, I guess. But as time goes on, it will be revealed that there is a crisis. And I don't want to alarm anybody out there. I want you to understand, it's not that the banks are going to go down and your money isn't going to be there. That would actually be a good thing. I know that sounds bad, but free market capitalism would allow those banks to fail, would allow the depositors to lose, but they're not going to let that happen. They're going to bail people out. And when they bail people out, your money's going to be there. It's just how much are you going to be able to buy with that money? That's the real risk. And that's not just the risk for people who keep their money in a bank account. That's a risk for people who store wealth in treasury bonds. very astute, wealthy, sophisticated investors for a very long time have stored their wealth in treasuries. And it's hard to make an argument against it until you get into the inflationary environment we're in now, because now we have negative real yields. And you cannot justify negative real yields as a proper store of value. You know, if you put $1 million in a bond or a note and you're going to get it in 10 years, there's no, I mean, come on. Does anybody think that the house that you're looking at right now on Zillow is going to be the same price even just 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Things are getting drastically more expensive because they're increasing the currency supply at a faster and faster rate. And that's what that Weimar Republic chart shows. As we go further and further into this process and we transition from inflation to hyperinflation, volatility is going to increase. The price of Bitcoin is going to go up and down greater than it ever has before. So you need to understand what Bitcoin is. Please take the time to study and learn it and understand how the store value function works, how it was strategically designed by Satoshi in Bitcoin for even after hyperinflation, conserved by energy, the value of energy and energy input. This is the stuff that's going to protect us through this transition of inflation to hyperinflation. And the only remaining catalyst is trust. So when trust is lost, the dollar hyperinflates. They don't even need to print more of it. It could just happen when, if they make one wrong move, if they manage the narrative one wrong way that turns the people the wrong way. That's really why they had to bail out the things. If they did let that happen, people would be like, I need to get everything out. And then everything would have collapsed. The banks would have had to sell all their assets. There would have been huge amounts of slippage within the marketplace. Markets would have cratered and tumbled as banks tried to raise money to give it to the depositors who wanted it out because they didn't know if they were going to be secure or not. So the Fed was forced to say, well, you know, everybody's okay. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And then that keeps the money where it is. So trust is the at the most critical level that it's ever been. And it's only the loss of that trust that will move us into hyperinflation. They can print perpetually as long as people are dumb enough to continue trusting them. But eventually, when they see that they're working harder, making a little bit more, but still buying less, trust is lost.
Dude, absolutely insane. And one thing you said, and this is one of the things that kind of blew my mind this last week. You said, like, as a Bitcoiner, we're ready for this. We're so, I don't know, things happen so fast in the Bitcoin space that we forget that the financial world is like, you know, turning the Titanic around. Things happen in slow motion. But one of the things that really blew my mind is the idea that in 2008, when the great financial crisis happened, it was also in March. And then in 2020, when the pandemic happened, it was also in March. And here we are in 2023, again in March, and things are blowing up. So, like, even on the financial Titanic time scale, things are happening at an incredibly accelerated pace. And we are really, you know, I know as a Bitcoiner, we have the meme, like, gradually then suddenly, but it really does feel like we are in that maybe the beginning of the end, that suddenly aspect of all this stuff happening. But my question is, and this is something that I keep thinking, is, you know, like, how much longer do you think they can kick the can down the road? Is there any more room for them to kick the can down the road? Because it still feels like they haven't pulled out all the guns yet. Like, it still feels like they're going to try to pull even more ridiculous stuff to kick this can down the road. But it's like, can they? And that's the question. Can they kick the can down the road?
Yes, they can. They can kick the can down the road because we're only going to go into hyperinflation when trust is lost. So as long as they can continue to justify, change definitions and lie about the reality, right? I mean, the perfect example was, guys, COVID is dangerous. Billions of people are going to die. Stay in your homes. Shut down the world. COVID wasn't more dangerous than the flu. And now they're saying, you know, don't worry about inflation. It's transitory. Don't worry about, oh, hey, we got inflation. We know how to control this. We got the proper tools to control this, right? So you tell me, do they always tell you the truth? No, it's about management. It's about narrative. It's about controlling the hive mind of the people who go to work and don't really have time to research this stuff or don't want to for whatever reason. I mean, life gets busy. I have three kids. I know what it's like. I got soccer practice Monday and Wednesday. I mean, things add up. Who can put in the time and energy to this, especially if you haven't been made financially free yet? That's why I think Bitcoiners are on the leading edge of understanding what's happening right now, because if you've been in Bitcoin for a halving cycle or two, then you are financially free. And that's giving you the time and energy to invest more time to understand what Bitcoin is and the benefits of Bitcoin for not only yourself, but for the world and for the financial system. So yeah, they can keep kicking this down until eventually people are so just controlled. And I mean, they say debt slavery, right? So until people are to the point where it crosses their line in the sand, they can keep doing it. And that's, you know, to me, that's a little bit scary. But at the same time, I would like to continue accumulating Bitcoin. And so I'm okay. I'm actually okay with it because it's an escape. And the more people that can get into Bitcoin now and understand these things, that's the real soft landing, right? Everybody's all like, the banking crisis, everything's burning, the world is ending. Actually, no, we're transitioning to a Bitcoin standard. We're transitioning to a more peaceful world. We're transitioning to truth money. We're transitioning to where your time and energy cannot be extracted from you from the powers that be. This is going to be so much better than what we have now. But you know what? For the time that we do have remaining, we got to educate people. We got to get people to get into Bitcoin to store that time and energy so that when it is the reserve asset of the internet economy, people can understand it, people can use it, and then more advanced users can collateralize it, facilitate marketplaces, and fill in the gaps of all the financial system right now. And what I love about Bitcoin and the internet economy is that the financial services and system that are going to be built up around Bitcoin as the reserve asset of the internet economy are going to be designed to deliver value to their customers. Banks are designed to extract value from their customers. There's not one thing the bank does with a depositor's money that delivers value to the customer. Everything they do extracts value from the customer. I mean, it's unbelievable when you look at all these products and services. Every single one of them is designed to extract value, and not through fees, not through like, oh, we're going to do this for you to help you, to empower you, and then you pay us a small fee to perform those services. No, most of the time the fees is just negligible because they're earning interest on you, or there's some other kind of scheme to where they're using your money to arbitrage a market. So the risk is on you, but the reward is on them. That doesn't work in Bitcoin. Look at FTX. Sam tried that, right? Yeah, you want some Bitcoins? No problem. I'll write you up some paper Bitcoin IOUs. Well, then people wanted their Bitcoins, and Bitcoin said, sorry, Sam, you can't borrow me from anybody. You can't print me. There's nothing you can do, bud. You shouldn't have sold paper Bitcoins. It don't work in this world. And guess what? Sam's gone. Failed. That's what should happen to all these other things. Failed. Gone. Mismanaged. I mean, these people are supposed to be Silicon Valley tech giants, the most sophisticated investors in the world, and you're putting your money at a bank that didn't even hedge its interest rate risk. And now the American people have to be diluted to the tune of possibly $2 trillion and probably even more just so that you don't lose your deposits. So the dominoes are getting bigger and bigger. When I first started, the dominoes were very small, but they were still falling. Now these dominoes that are falling are bigger and bigger. And the bigger the domino is, the more attention it's going to draw. And the more attention it draws, the more risk there is of them losing trust in the system. So I predict over the next 6 months to a year, they'll be doing everything they can to convince people they're in control. You don't have to worry about anything. The banking system is safe. Nothing is going to go wrong. If something does go wrong, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. And what people need to realize is that the way they're taking care of it is they're not paying for it. We are, because inflation is taxation without representation. And inflation is the largest tax out of all taxes on the American people. So we need to wake up and let our neighbors, family, and friends, if you're like me, maybe you don't get invited to Thanksgiving anymore, but if you still are invited to Thanksgiving, well then, you know, let them know, because it's happening in front of everybody's eyes and the world is in denial.
Man, CJ, absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. Pure signal. And actually, I do want to kind of transition this into more of a Bitcoin talk, but there's a good comment in here that I think is it's something that we talk about all the time here. And I'm going to pose you the question, but you can also kind of go into the comment in the chat. And the question that kind of got brought to my mind during when you were just talking, in your opinion, do you think the transition to Bitcoin standard, will it be a peaceful transition, or as you kind of said, the soft landing, or are we in for, you know, for lack of better terms, like a rocky decade of a slow transition, or maybe even a fast transition? But I really like this comment right here by higher by Higher Calling. He says, seriously, though, I think this is controlled demolition to roll out a CBDC. And we saw this week the Fed Now announced, or the Federal Reserve announced their Fed Now payment services. So what's your thoughts on this? Is this going to be a peaceful transition, or is this controlled demolition into a CBDC system because they've completely lost control?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something that I've been thinking about and praying about for wisdom and discernment. This is probably one of the most important questions that can be asked in the entire world right now. And the answer to that question is, how do you get FDIC to go from 250,000 to unlimited? Right? Before 250,000, it was 100,000, a little bit less. It slowly grew over the years. But we just went from 250,000 to unlimited. So why would they do that? Why would every single banking deposit need to be bailed out? I do believe it is very plausible that this is laying the groundwork to shift all of the deposit liabilities, right? It's critical to understand that your deposit at a bank is a liability to them, right? It's your asset, but it's their liability. And then they take it and they buy an asset to match that liability fractionally. So that's reserved, right? And then with the rest of it, they go do whatever the hell they want to make money and not share any of it with you. But people need to realize, why did we just pass a rule that would allow the liabilities of a bank to be passed to the FDIC? And then is it so much of a guess, or is it so crazy to say, well, if we can pass that bank liability to the FDIC, we can now pass that bank liability to the Federal Reserve? Right. And now now all bank deposits, which are liabilities of these other banks that need to be covered with assets, and sometimes there's liquidity mismatches, and there's all these problems with making the bank deposit a liability on these investment and commercial banks. So let's make people's deposit a liability at the Fed, because the Fed has an unlimited balance sheet. There is no liability that cannot be added to the balance sheet. I mean, just look at their balance sheet right now. They can just print money and it doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. So I think this funding program, it's not necessarily about providing the mismatched liquidity behind the fractional reserves of deposits, because there's bigger problems there from what we said before. Banks would actually, because it is only fractionally reserved with cash equivalents, they'd have to sell other real assets, which would affect the broader marketplace as they started to sell. So it's not really about gapping the fill of that mismatch. What it's really about is allowing those liabilities to be transferred from these commercial and investment banks, which shouldn't be allowed to happen anyway. You just go back to the Glass-Steagall Act, where you investment banks and commercial banks are two different things. And the definition of a depository institution would be more accurate and depositors would be more safe, but they don't care. That's long gone. What comes next is we shift over to the Fed. Once you're at the Fed, that is the central bank digital currency. They have unlimited assets. They have a money printer. So there is no liability that puts their balance sheet at risk. Whoever asked that question, I think, is thinking about this. And what do they say? You're playing 4D chess, right? A couple of people are playing checkers and they're talking about a banking crisis and, oh my gosh, the whole thing could melt down. A few people are playing chess and saying, well, don't worry about the money being there. Just worry about how much it's going to buy. But some people are doing what you just did and playing 4D chess and saying, what comes after this? And a central bank digital currency issued by the Federal Reserve, with all investment and commercial banking liabilities being shifted over to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, makes sense to me. Maybe they don't have to print the money. That's the lie, right? We didn't print it. We just transferred the liabilities from JP Morgan, Bank of America, and Citibank, and all these systemically important banks. We just transferred the liability from one balance sheet to another. We didn't create any money. Well, yeah, they did, because now all of those assets that have to back that have to be printed by the Federal Reserve, but they're not going to print it in fiat. They're not going to just type it in the computer in fiat. They're going to provide it through a central bank digital currency. It's super hard to argue against that. And they just recently announced that the FedNow service, which could very well be the implementation of the central bank digital currency, because remember, central bank digital currency is not some decentralized blockchain. It's a piece of software that the bank's going to use, that they control fully. Nobody runs a node. They are the node. What they say goes. So it's an internal software that's going to be used to manage the central bank digital currency for interbank transfers, but also from the Fed to the direct deposit liability, which would be us. And that's where you start to talk about social credit scores and all the other things we talked about in our previous interview. Great question.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. All right. Again, I do want to angle this back into Bitcoin because there's some things that we want to hit at the end of the conversation. But I did call this show, this episode, World War III is Financial. And I have your tweet here. And very, very plainly, you said World War III is an economic war being fought in the financial markets. Maybe lay out exactly, I mean, you just laid it all out, in my opinion. But for the people that still haven't connected the dots, what did you mean by this tweet?
Yeah, so what's really interesting about Credit Suisse having a lot of stress, because we've been talking about them for a while, but you'll realize the other day, the Minister of Finance for Saudi Arabia, who is supposed to be a NATO ally, right? It was our original deal with Saudi Arabia that created the petrodollar. They're supposed to be like our biggest advocates and our biggest partners. Well, they came out and said, we're not going to send any more money to Credit Suisse. And what this does, it creates stress on the entire system because the real war is being fought in the financial markets. The real war is seeing who has to print the most money, because that's what it is. It's a race to zero. Think about it. If you were the government and you had a printer and you had the ability to print unlimited amounts of money to do whatever you wanted to do with according to your budget, well, then the goal would be to print as much as you can without losing the trust in order to extract as much value as you can for as long as you can. Well, when Saudi Arabia comes out and says they're not going to backstop and forces the Swiss National Bank to do that, when China comes out and starts selling treasury bills, when all these things start happening, it's about financial warfare. It's about making the United States have to devalue their currency because we're in a race to zero and the governments aren't stupid. You don't want to finish this race first. It's like golf. You want the lowest score. You want to finish this race last because the last one standing is going to benefit the most. The last one standing is going to extract the most value from the system. So the games that are being played on a really high level, and honestly, I can't go into details because I'm not in that circle. So I can see it happening, but I can't go into details, but everybody can see it happening. I'm sure you're saying in your head right now, yeah, shit's going down, because it is going down. And people are making big moves. And Saudi Arabia, a lot of these NATO nations that are friends of NATO right now, I think personally, they want to be BRICS nations, but they can't come out and say that. I mean, that they just can't say that. But in the background, they're already setting up for this. So Saudi Arabia trading oil for digital yuan with China and then breaking into that market with Iran. All of these things are slowly happening. And like you said, Opti, Bitcoin is like dog years, right? 1 year in Bitcoin is like 7 years in traditional finance. So in traditional finance, when you see things happening at this speed, it's time to pay attention.
Oh my goodness. All right, guys, it's looking like my internet might be acting weird, so hopefully I didn't fall off. But anyways, let's angle this towards the Bitcoin conversation. CJ, you talked earlier. You said you would like to touch on store value, the difficulty adjustment, and the halving. And last time you were on and you were in the spaces with us, you got a lot of flack for your idea of the production theory of mining. So I have the quote here that you tagged in afterwards. I'll give you the plan. You go into this and then we'll go down that rabbit hole.
Awesome. Yeah. So a lot of people actually reached out and DM'd me. I love the Simply Bitcoin TV community. You guys are awesome. I'll answer as many DMs as I can and help out as much as I can. You guys are super active. It's great. Well, you guys came to me and you said, hey, where can I learn about this? Where did you hear this? Where can I learn more about this? And a lot of people were super surprised when I told them, this isn't me. This was Satoshi. So, don't give me flack for this because I'm just carrying the torch forward. I'm doing what I can to promote what Satoshi taught us. And if you read this quote, this is the definition of store of value, right? The definition of store of value. The price of any commodity tends to gravitate towards the production cost. Okay, that's a really important concept, guys. That means the price of Bitcoin is going to gravitate towards its production cost. Okay. If the price is below cost, then production slows down. Okay, it works that way with gold too, right? If gold goes below its all-in sustaining cost, well, then the miners go out of business. When the miners go out of business, the supply stops hitting the market. When the supply stops hitting the market against the consistent demand, the price goes up. And when the price goes back up above the cost of production, miners come back into business because they can profitably produce. And then the supply goes up and the price comes back down. This is a commodity cycle. And this is how commodity cycles work. So if the price is above cost, profit can be made by generating and selling more. At the same time, the increased production would increase the difficulty. Here's where Satoshi's genius comes into play, where he strategically designs Bitcoin with the difficulty adjustment. Why? Because when you increase the difficulty, it pushes the cost of generating or the cost of production towards the price. So as the price goes up, just like the price of gold goes up above its all-in sustaining cost, and more producers come because they can make a profit, and then the supply goes up. Well, guess what? Bitcoin's not supply adjusted. Bitcoin's supply can't hit the market faster because more people are producing it. When more people pull gold out of the ground, the supply of gold increases at a faster pace. The supply of Bitcoin cannot increase at a faster pace. It is set and there's no way around it. And more people who want to produce Bitcoin or earn, the more and more people who want to earn the Bitcoin subsidy, they are causing more and more hash rate. And as hash rate goes up, block time goes down. As block time goes down, difficulty goes up. So every 2016 blocks, roughly every 2 weeks, the cost of production is going up and it's being pushed towards the price. So when the price is above the cost of production goes up. This is the store of value function. This is what I was saying, Opti, in that tweet that you said you liked. With that guy, Robin Brooks, man, he got grilled by the Bitcoin community. I love the Bitcoin community. This guy came out with the most stupid Bitcoin tweet about how zero store value, blah, blah, because, and he showed a chart of it going from 70 down to 15. You don't store value at the peaks. You store value at the bottoms. So see, the store value mechanism that's designed into Bitcoin with the difficulty adjustments and with the halving, it's designed to create higher lows, right? The definition of store value is higher lows. And Satoshi knew that. And we know that he knew that because of the quote that we just showed you. So he strategically designed these things to store value long after fiat currency is gone. Because after fiat currency is gone, now we're talking about Bitcoin energy value, right? It's energy value that is going to determine what the fair value of Bitcoin is. And the amount of work that you do will be relative to your energy. So the baseline will be energy, not a price of money that is determined by a group of men for the whole world. I mean, that's just insanity. That's not free market. It's insane to think that they can't tell us the price of eggs, chicken, and milk. But hey, you can tell us the price of money. No, Satoshi didn't believe that either. And you can tell by his design that is specifically designed to use the economics that surround how producers work to drive value into Bitcoin. Because yeah, and you know what? Ultimately, fair value can go down a little bit. It goes up and down, right? There's negative difficulty adjustments too, but there is a natural free market price discovery mechanism that is built into Bitcoin. And that is unbelievable because there is no other asset in the world that is like that, especially because the inflation rate of Bitcoin is fixed. There's only 21 million supply and we have the inflation schedule. So it doesn't matter how many people want to produce Bitcoin, you can't make more of it. So because that's a fact, he then puts in the difficulty adjustment along with the halving, right? So the difficulty adjustment increases the cost of production slowly every 2 weeks if you get a positive adjustment. A negative adjustment will decrease that cost of production. But on a net-net basis, the Bitcoin network is growing faster probably than any network. Someone's got to fact check me on this, but I don't think there's any other network in the history of humanity that has grown as fast as the Bitcoin network. So it's growing at an enormous clip, even through a China mining ban. We're over 300 exahashes. It's blowing up. You got the soft war thesis out there from Jason Lowry. If he's true about that and countries start buying hash rate to produce Bitcoin, the all-in sustaining cost of Bitcoin is going to go through the roof, which means the floor price, the natural asset value of Bitcoin is going to continue to increase. And when it starts to decrease, this is when it becomes interesting. This is what makes Bitcoin sustainable, because the store of value is not just about driving value into Bitcoin. It's also about sustainability, because when the cost of production goes down as a result of a negative difficulty adjustment, miners become more profitable. So when that difficulty adjustment goes down, it's actually attracting more miners to come participate because they can make more money. You know, if the price of gold went down, it wouldn't really do anything. So Bitcoin is alive. It is actually like a living price discovery mechanism on energy. That's why I call it commoditized energy in the form of money, because it is a real live resource that was properly designed to store your time and energy through space and time. There is nothing else that can even try to compete with it. To think that you can even compete with it, you're on crazy pills or something. Nothing can compete with Bitcoin. And it's all about the store value design that creates higher lows, as not based on price action, but based on the actual production of Bitcoin, the network growth of Bitcoin, the all-in sustaining costs of Bitcoin, the cost of production of Bitcoin, the natural asset value. I hate when people say Bitcoin has no intrinsic value. Bullshit. Bitcoin has no. Try to create a Bitcoin for me. Go ahead and win a Bitcoin. Just spend no money and win a Bitcoin. You can do that with dollars. They just created $2 trillion by overnight. They just did that. No cost whatsoever. No proof of work whatsoever. But you try to do that with Bitcoin, you can't. You got to spend money. You need proof of work. You need to understand what you're doing. As you get involved, you drive up the difficulty because you're increasing the hash rate. That drives up the cost of production. That drives up the natural asset value. Satoshi understood this, and I'm just trying to carry that flame forward, because as a miner, that's my favorite quote from Satoshi. You know, a lot of people quote Satoshi like, well, if you don't know, I don't got time to tell you. That's a good one too. But, you know, the reason I'm spending time is because I do have time to tell you this. But this quote is the definition of store of value. And if Bitcoiners can understand this, they will have the conviction to hold through the hyperinflation of the dollar. Because as the volatility goes up and your Bitcoin goes to 1 million and then back down to 100,000 and then the 2 million and then back down to 200,000, most people are going to go insane. I mean, it takes like deep breaths and some meditation to lose so much net worth over the course of just 1 year. But when you know where this is going, it's not a problem. When you know where this is going, you have conviction, you have understanding, you have wisdom, you have discernment, and you can kind of just laugh at everybody else as they're panicking, playing checkers and chess, while we're trying to figure out 3 and 4 moves down the line.
Absolutely love it. Could you read the quote for the audio listeners?
Yeah, the price of any commodity tends to gravitate toward the production cost. If the price is below cost, then production slows down. If the price is above cost, profit can be made by generating and selling more. At the same time, the increased production would increase the difficulty, pushing the cost of generating, the cost of production, towards the price. Satoshi Nakamoto. There it is right there, guys. He is telling you what store of value is. He is telling you how he designed this algorithm to properly store value, not just through fiat hyperinflation, but long after all the fiat shit coins are gone too, because it's based on producer economics and Bitcoin energy value.
Absolutely love it. I think at this point you need some horns for sure. But I mean, my first thought is just a comment. I'll just, man, like, if you are not bullish on Bitcoin after what you just heard, I really don't know, like, what more we need to say. And I don't want to cut you off and go into another avenue, but there's some things you want to add on it, because I did bring up in the beginning of the, before we recorded, that last time you were on the show, you said something prescient as well, but I don't want to fully transition into another topic because I know it's going to be an epic rant. So is there anything left on this topic right here before I ask you the next question?
Yes. I do want to say this. There's a reason that gold won't go to zero. And gold won't go to zero because there's a base layer of demand. And that base layer of demand actually serves as like the core business principle of how the producer economics work, right? So if the price of gold starts to go too low, producers aren't going to create it. And as the supply drops on that consistent base layer of demand, then the price starts to go back up until producers are profitable and they re-enter the marketplace. That is why gold has worked for thousands and thousands of years. Okay. Bitcoin works better. So don't let anybody tell you that Bitcoin is going to go to zero. You see a lot of people out there, some of them even perceived as sophisticated, who say Bitcoin is going to go to zero. Based on what? That's not based on any reality. The producer economics that support Bitcoin production are what secure its value. And the intrinsic value of Bitcoin is real because it's based on proof of work and energy input. So don't let anybody tell you that. That's the most Satoshi is telling you. Don't let anybody tell you it's going to go to zero. And don't let anybody tell you that it's worthless. There is real value in this network, and it's beyond just the supply-demand variables. Sure, supply-demand plays a big role. That demand is what pushes the premiums to natural asset value. But when the demand disappears and you get into a bear market, you come back down to fundamental value, right? So it's okay. Not saying that that's the last thing I'll say. I'm not saying that the natural asset value, the cost of production, has to be the price of Bitcoin. Absolutely not. What's important about that price is that it's the free market price based more on the supply-demand equilibrium relative to its cost of production, right? That's what a miner needs to know. They need to know, what is this costing me to produce? And am I trading at a discount or am I trading at a premium? Because if it's at a discount, turn off your machines and instead of paying more for electricity, just take that money that you would have paid for electricity straight to the marketplace and buy it from there. You're going to get more Bitcoin. So this is like the core thing that backs Bitcoin is producer economics, and the store of value is strategically designed into it. Don't let anybody else tell you otherwise.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So I do try to keep these around an hour, but we might run a little longer because as I told you before the show, when you came on Simply Bitcoin Live, what was that? A week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, you said another prescient thing, and it was in regards to stable coins. And then we saw what happened the beginning of this week. And I think it might do us a disservice if we didn't touch on that by the time this episode ended, considering that we are pretty much in the midst of exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah. So it was really wild to see. I didn't think it would come to fruition as fast, but it's the business model, right? The problem with stable coins is that the business model. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. The business model of stable coins is the same business model as a bank. It's not designed to deliver value to you. It's designed to extract value from you. Why? Because you give them your reserves, and then they go and they buy cash equivalents, these short-term yielding bills, but you don't get anything. So they get to custody your reserves and earn passive income, passive cash flow. And then you have your crypto token in the crypto economy or the internet economy, but you're being diluted unless you take risk, right? They're not taking any risk. They're just custodying your dollars. And then they're earning what, 4% and 5% in these short-term treasury bills that are liquid to back. So it is unbelievable that people let them get away with this. There needs to be some type of mechanism because look, Bitcoin's going through price discovery. The price isn't going to be stable. The natural asset value is adjusting. The market price is adjusting. The network is growing exponentially. The demand, we do have a base layer of demand. All my Bitcoin stackers and hodlers out there, we are the base layer of demand. We're going to buy at any price. It doesn't matter. I'm going to buy it every single day. I'm not holding my dollars. I'm not saving in my dollars. I'm saving in Bitcoin. And I don't care what the price is. I bought Bitcoin at the top at like $69,000 and change. I paid the highest possible price you could. And I bought it all the way down to sub 17 as well, all the way through the whole process, because it doesn't matter what the price is to me right now, because I know where all these roads end. I know where all these roads end is Bitcoin's going to represent purchasing power way beyond the dollar price right now. So understanding that and then looking at stable coins and saying, wow, these people are actually extracting value from you. They're taking all of your dollars, custodying those dollars, keeping all the yield they make from custodying those dollars, and then giving you nothing. It's a broken business model. What they didn't see coming was the traditional banking crisis. And the argument is USDC is actually better than a dollar in the bank. It used to be, because USDC would be fully reserved with the cash equivalent. So at least, it was 1-to-1. Yeah, it wasn't fiat cash, but it was a cash equivalent held in a liquid short-term maturity treasury. So it's, I mean, it's about as liquid as you can get, right? And if it's not liquid, then we have bigger problems than a one-to-one backing, because that means you're in hyperinflation. So you have a liquid backing at one-to-one. Well, up until Sunday night, the dollars in your bank account were backed by like 4 cents, 5 cents. If you go off the average capital ratio of a bigger bank, you know, if you go off FDIC, it was backed by like 1.2 cents. But up until Sunday night, those stable coins were actually safer than the dollars in the bank because they were backed one-to-one. But that didn't change the fact that there's fundamentally the business model is corrupt, because they're taking your savings and they earn from your savings while you get nothing. And if you want something, you're forced to take a risk in the internet economy. That's even worse than some of the other products that exist to give people at least a little bit of something, a little remuneration for the dollars that they had in the bank. So at the point where we are now, the dollars are not safe in the stable coins. The dollars are not safe in the banks. And it's not that they're going to disappear. They're not. It's what they're going to buy. The problem is what they're going to buy, because it doesn't matter if USDC doesn't mint any more coins. It doesn't matter if there's more redemptions. It's the underlying asset that it represents, right? USDC is a derivative of the dollar. That means its value is derived from the dollar. Bad news. The dollar doesn't have that much value left. And when trust goes, it's going to lose value amazingly quick. I mean, like, look at how fast this banking went down. SVB Bank or Silicon Valley Bank was in the Forbes 500 or something like that. Top bank in the United States. They were even bragging about it. A couple weeks later, and in less than 48 hours, they disappeared. So this is going to happen extremely fast when it does happen. And nobody's going to be able to tell you, well, it's going to happen now. It's going to happen at this day, at this hour. I'm telling you right now, the dollar is at the end of its currency life cycle. And it is better to be 1 month, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years early than just 1 second late.
Now listen, death call, motherfucking boy.
Absolutely mind blown. I can't even process the fire hose of information that you're giving our audience, but it's one of these episodes that I know I'm going to have to rewatch a few times just so I know exactly like every nuance take that you're giving us. But absolutely honored that you come up here and you did another absolute great, great Bitcoin orange pill session for us. And of course, first and foremost, I'm going to ask you one more question before we go out. But before I do that, and before I forget, honored to have you here, and we'll bring you back as much as we need to get this message out there for the people out there, because apparently they still don't know what's going on. And this is the part that blows my mind. Anyways, when we originally got hip to you, CJ, on Twitter, I don't know who it was, so forgive me, guys. Someone said, hearing Opti and CJ together, I need this pure optimism. And I know, hey, I've been feeling bullish. I've been feeling optimistic about this. But besides everything that you told us, what is the most optimistic thing about Bitcoin to you personally? What is the thing that gets you up in the morning, that gets you excited to orange pill the world, and that keeps you coming back for more and learning more?
It is absolutely 100% the design of Bitcoin. The difficulty adjustments plus the halving. We'll have to do it. Opti, when I come back, we'll do another episode and we'll just talk about that. And we'll go down into extreme nuances, because the way that the system was designed by Satoshi and the people who supported Satoshi and those early versions of Core, it is unbelievable. It's so well thought out. It's not just one line of thinking. You have to understand so many different types of philosophies and ideologies to design something like Bitcoin. And what's amazing is Bitcoin is truth. So I've heard some people say it this way: Bitcoin wasn't invented, it was discovered. And I think that's a really interesting concept, because the truth is truth. The truth was and is to come. We know that for a fact. It's not going to change. So Bitcoin is our way of discovering truth money. And that's what makes me so excited about it. Bitcoin isn't going to judge you by your skin color, by your credit score, by how many Bitcoins you have. Honestly, it doesn't care who you are. It is the most fair and free market in the world. It is the reserve asset of the internet economy. which is the only economy in the world that has free market interest rates. Every other economy in the world tries to tell you the price of money. Bitcoin says, you tell me what you think my price is. I don't care. I mean, the freedom that comes with this, that allows you to be a capitalist and a free market advocate, is unmatched by any other asset, any other ecosystem in the entire world. So that's where my excitement for Bitcoin comes from. That's where my passion for Bitcoin comes from. It's truth money, and the truth never changes. And once we build our society on top of truth instead of lies, everything's going to change. All the incentives are going to change. And I think humanity will explode forward. Not only with, you know, a lot of people are like, AI is going to take over. No, all good things are going to happen because it's going to be based on truth. And things are, value's not going to be extracted from the people. It's going to be delivered back to the people who can then invest it into the real economy. So then we can get some GDP growth, right? I don't want to call it inflation because I'm not going to use their fraudulent definitions. But if I were them, that's how you would get their type of inflation. Allow savings to go up. As savings go up, credit can expand. Savers become spenders and investors. And then you have sustainable growth. And you can build on top of a strong foundation. Bitcoin is truth money that is the cornerstone foundation to the internet economy, that is the only healthy economy in the world because it's not managed by men. And treasuries are the capstone. Treasuries are the inverted pyramid. The traditional system is the entire weight of all these derivatives, debt on top of debt on top of derivative debt, times 100 times 1,000. And it's not even marked to market. So it's fake valuations. It's the bank saying, well, this is what it would be worth in a perfectly liquid market if things went the way we wanted it to. But in reality, it's not worth that. But it, you know, it, the truth is what I say it is. No, the truth is what Bitcoin says it is. And that's what gets me up in the morning. I know I can. Nodes trust nobody so that anybody can trust everybody. Nodes trust nobody so that everybody can trust anybody. Truth money is the future of humanity.
Wow. I am almost positive we could keep going for another hour, but let's stop it here, CJ, and we'll bring you back on. So guys, give us what you want us to hear on the next one. Drop us a comment in the chat and we will bring CJ back. I don't know what we'll do. I think maybe we'll have to wait more than 2 weeks on this next one because who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of months, but we'll bring you on soon again, CJ. We can go all in on having. And then what are you working on? What do you want people to, where can they find you better yet?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. And I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about Bitcoin. It is my passion. I love AMAs. So maybe you can organize and ask me anything. And I can just kind of get blindsided by questions. That's when I have my best orange pill moments. Sometimes people ask questions that even make me think about something in a different way and try to explain it in a different way. So that would be cool. I'm just like everybody else. Get those orange pills ready. Bring them to the rave and hand them out because that's what this is about. Let's teach as many people as we can about Bitcoin as commoditized energy in the form of money and as the reserve asset of the internet economy. If they can understand that Bitcoin stores value from them because it was designed to store value even beyond the existence of fiat shitcoins, then people are going to be comfortable, they're going to be confident, and we can move into an abundant future based on truth money.
Well, couldn't agree more. And just to your last point, that's the thing that really gets me the most excited as well. I always say it kind of like a meme. I am team human and I want to see humanity prosper. And I base my life on just like, show me the truth. I want to know the true nature of reality. And this is why I think I am attracted to Bitcoin in the first place. As you said, it's truth money. It's the true reality personified, in my opinion. And we're so far off the cliff in clown world that, you know, something like Bitcoin is just, it's going to have such profound effects on the world that we just can't even fully imagine it. And this is usually what I try to do on this podcast is touch on that stuff. But I would have done our audience a disservice if I didn't let CJ give us all the context. So next time we'll come back, we'll talk about the halving, and then we'll go in the DMs and we'll talk about an AMA, and maybe we could just jump on Twitter Spaces one day and we'll just do like an impromptu AMA, nothing planned. We'll just let people come up and talk to you. So CJ, really appreciate it. Hang out for 20 seconds. There's a 20 second delay, and we'll roll this one out right now. So just chill out for a moment. Oops, wrong one. And we'll bring you back in. Guys, I know you like that one. We went a little long. We gave you guys the complete sauce. My mind's blown. I knew this was going to be a mind-blowing orange pill session. And so, again, drop your comments, questions in the chat on the YouTube video, and then we'll try to schedule something so we can just do an impromptu AMA for you guys, and we can do it on Twitter Spaces. Maybe we can figure out and we come back to YouTube, because I know not everyone's on you are on Twitter. But I hope you enjoyed this. I hope it not only blew my mind, but your mind as well. I heard a few people in the chat. They're like, yo, I just had a mind-blowing epiphany. So this is what we're trying to do. We're going to continue to give you guys the sauce as much as possible from anyone and anywhere that brings the pure signal. So come back. We will have our live show tomorrow, 12:10 p.m. Eastern time. But hey, we're going to keep these series running for you guys. So keep stacking. We will see you on the other side. We will see you in the bright orange future. And until then, guys, peace out. And come back another time, bro. We're dropping all the content. All right, peace out, guys.